Welcome to The Good, The Bad, and The Reality. We are brought to you by DUnity Group and 8A The Easy Way, your fast track to government contracts. I am Myra Cisse, and I'm joined today by a guest co-host, Mr. Jason Bass. Hey there, Jason.
Hello, Myra. How are you?
I'm doing great. Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
I know. Are you dressing up tonight with the kiddies?
No, I will not be dressing up tonight with the kiddies.
What? Did the kids dress up at least?
They do, but my youngest is like, well, you know, I don't like Halloween anymore.
Oh, wow. Goodness gracious. He's above that. Well, you know, I am certainly not. I'm going to be a cat as usual. my daughter's going to be the ladybug. I realized last night that I've lost my tail, so I'll have to go out and find another one tonight. But anyway, this is the Halloween episode just for all those listening in. Each week, we talk about what makes business ownership so rewarding as it relates to the challenges of running a small business and ultimately why you choose to do what you do. And today, we've got a couple of guests in the audience with us. We've got Mr. Lucas Acosta, founder of Fuji, with us.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Good to be here. Good. And we also have one other guest with us.
We have Joe James with us from J&A Insurance Agency.
Good morning. Good morning.
Wonderful. Well, why don't we get started with you, Joe, and just kind of find out what it is that you do with your insurance company.
Okay. Well, we are a local brokerage, so that means that we are not, tethered to any one insurance company. We are contracted with many different carriers and underwriting markets, where we have the ability to kind of determine what a small business owner's needs are and then go out and find the appropriate market and coverage for them.
Wonderful. I know I was in banking for a number of years, so, you know, doing commercial loans and that sort of thing, mm-hmm. it was often challenging for my clients to find commercial insurance and a really good agent. So that's really good that you represent several different lines of business,
yes.
so can find the clients what they need. Now, I know you do some really interesting things with some insurance products for tech companies and some newfound things that I'd never heard of before.
Yes, that's
correct.
Talk
to us a little bit about that.
Well, off air before we started the interview this morning or the show this morning, we talked about the kind of the mushrooming of the hacking industry. if a small business, for instance, that is in technology related services houses credit card data or mm-hmm. other very sensitive data that they maintain because they maybe conduct shopping cart transactions on their website or their customer does that they've designed a website for, let's say, and that website is hacked into, credit card data is stolen, or you just have a small business that sells products on their website and they have a shopping cart, let's say, and they capture credit card data or social security information, that sort of thing.
So there's insurance to protect that data?
That is correct. If that information is compromised and, we've got an identity theft situation, those consumers are now vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And they have to take certain steps to restore their identity.
Right.
You know, there are insurance coverages that can assist in that process, you know, notify the credit reporting bureaus, et cetera, et cetera. The insurance products can provide expense reimbursement for certain items related to that process. You know, they can provide coverage in the event that small business has a suit filed against them.
Okay. So that's really interesting. So the coverage that you provide is for, let's say, the tech company that has the sensitive data on their systems. If one of their clients has their information compromised, then that company, if they are sued, then the insurance will protect?
That is correct. It can provide that coverage not only to the tech company, but to the small business itself that housed the data.
Oh.
Okay. It's called different things. Cyber liability, you might hear the term data breach. We have it, as a matter of fact. And the coverage can also, in some instances, extend outside of the website. So, for example, if you maintain paper files in your office and you have that same type of information, and not to pick on any one individual or service, but if someone has access to your office space and they come in after hours and someone forgot to lock the filing cabinet, there are carriers that will extend the coverage to those paper files as well if they become compromised.
Interesting.
So to what extent, though, are, you know, we as business owners, you know, we have a website. So many people start businesses, they have websites with e-commerce.
Mm-hmm.
To what extent are we actually liable? And how can it be even proven that it was our site that's been compromised and things like that? How would a consumer know that if they are a victim of identity theft?
Well, sometimes they don't know until well after the fact. You know, when they go to use a credit card they haven't used in a while, and they're notified that they can't use it, you know, because the limit has been maxed out. And then they contact the credit card company and find out that there have been several large purchases made. You know, sometimes it comes to that. Or sometimes the company that sells the product on their website has somehow become notified that their website has been compromised, and then they will contact every consumer that they've done business with over a certain period of time. So the notification can happen in a variety of ways. But as far as the extent of liability, I don't know if there's a limit. You know, I mean, one of the things that you're taught in a basic law class is, you know, everyone and anyone is named in a lawsuit, you know.
Everyone along the distributor line is usually named in a lawsuit.
Yeah,
for even your common products that, you know, down the line.
Yeah.
But now, you know, I consult my clients, you know, and I tell them you must get business insurance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've never, you know, said you must get, you know, this kind of liability insurance. What are the costs associated with this type of insurance?
It really depends on the carrier, but it really comes down to asking questions of your agent. You know, what exposures would you suggest that I consider covering for my business and the things that I do? Unfortunately, quite often we find that many small businesses, especially those that are in the early stages, either don't secure coverage at all, or they wait to secure coverage when it's being required in association with a contract that they're trying to fulfill.
Mm-hmm.
But the client that they're going to be providing services for is obviously interested in protecting their interest, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily the customer's interest, the small business's interest that's going to be providing services for them. So it's incumbent upon them to ask questions of their agent.
Right.
What potential exposures do you see here that I have, and what would you recommend?
And I know that you say that business insurance should be a part of every small business's operational budget.
Absolutely.
So is there like a rule of thumb as far as a certain percentage or based on revenue size, or what should one expect to spend on that?
Well, it's too much of a moving number, I think, to give a simple answer to, but it certainly insurance should be part of every small business's budget.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you've got a brick and mortar retail store and you're selling clothing or children's toys or whatever the case may be, to whether you're a small business that provides professional services.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're providing professional services such as a IT consultant, you know, you not only want to look at a basic commercial general liability policy, which most small businesses are somewhat familiar with, but you want to look at an errors and omissions policy to cover those professional services. So if you make an error in the design or implementation of a software related technology product, and it results in a some sort of financial disruption to the client that you served, you want to make sure that you're protected. If nothing else, it will provide legal defense cost protection. And even if there's no final claim settlement,
right?
You know, they will hire an attorney on your behalf and defend you. You know, that's first line of defense in that errors and omissions policy. So,
well, that's good to know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And always something to be aware of in this litigious society we live in, right?
That's right. That's right.
Now, I know you talked about some specific things relating to commercial property.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to us somewhat about that, like commercial property insurance.
Well, if you consider, you know, a lot of the small businesses that have been impacted, for instance, from the effects of Hurricane Sandy,
mm-hmm.
you know, that are now shut down. They can't operate as a result of that hurricane. In many business owner policies, you can obtain a coverage that's called, or purchase a coverage that's called business income interruption, expense coverage. If that feature is on your policy, there can be some reimbursement to you as a small business owner for the period of time in which you're losing revenues. As a result of the disruption in your business, okay?
And that coverage will also include inventory, things like
that,
right?
Comes under the business personal property coverage.
Oh, that's under that. Okay.
Yes, and you select the coverage amount that you feel you need to cover that inventory. And yes, it can replace that after your deductible is applied.
Gotcha.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. So what are some like common terms that we as lay people need to be aware of when it comes to just knowing about insurance?
Exclusions. you want to.
I think
you,
I know what that one means.
You never want to leave it up to anyone else to walk you through an entire policy. You want to go to the section that says policy exclusions and find out what's excluded and see if there's a way to add it back by what we call a policy endorsement.
Okay.
You know, I think the common mistake that the general public makes is that their agent should know everything. And let me tell you, especially when you're a broker and you represent several different carriers,
right,
and the policy is 50-some-odd pages thick to maybe 219, you can't reasonably expect an agent to know every page of that policy.
Right.
So you have to ask questions, and you can't be afraid to look at the policy. Mm-hmm. You know, I know it can be intimidating, but to glance through it, if anything jumps out at you, you know, contact your agent and ask some questions.
Well, that's good to know. I mean, so if I'm looking at a 219-page insurance policy, I just find the subsection that says exclusions. And
start there. Start there. And look at your coverage limits, you know, when it says business, personal, property, we know that's our contents coverage.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just look at how much you have versus inventory that you have on hand at any given time. Is it enough?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is my deductible affordable? Yes, I went with this high deductible to keep my costs down. But if that claim happens, can I afford to have the total claim settlement applied after this deductible is applied? Is that going to get me back to where I was prior to the loss?
Right.
You have to ask those kinds of questions of yourself.
No, I take note that he mentioned 219 pages.
I know.
I had one the other day that was 219 pages. That's right.
Yeah, obviously some lawyer wrote that. No offense to the lawyers we have listening.
But, you know, insurance policies have table of contents, too, just like books do, you know. And you look at the table of contents, and it will point you to certain sections based on the information that you're looking for.
Gotcha.
You know, and you can read it. And if it's anything is confusing, you contact your agent. You know, an agent will go over certain things with you, but I don't think anyone can go through the entire policy with you, you know. So.
And you mentioned something called endorsements. So if there are exclusions on there, can the endorsements then, I don't know, help to mitigate risk?
Sometimes they can.
Okay.
Sometimes they can. Sometimes it's not always possible, but sometimes they can.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you fill in the gaps.
I'm sorry?
They fill in the gaps pretty much.
Yes, sometimes. Yeah, they can help fill in some of those coverage gaps. Yeah.
Good to know.
And I did have a question on the difference between market value and insurance to value.
Ah, yes.
Could you just really
highlight
that?
I'm glad you asked that. Here I'll kind of pivot to both commercial insurance commercial property as well as residential property.
Okay.
Because of the housing market that we're in right now, we've been in for a while, just the real estate market in general.
Right.
Resale values have been affected, right?
Mm-hmm.
In an adverse way to those of us that own property where values have gone down. Unfortunately, it's very difficult for the average consumer to associate what their property should be insured at versus what it's valued at.
Right.
The intent of the insurance policy is to rebuild the structure, okay? Based on market conditions at any given time, the value of that property can change, but it doesn't correlate with the construction cost necessarily.
Right.
Okay. So it's always important that they try and insure the property for the estimated cost to rebuild. And actually, many carriers will have a feature in their policy, their property section of their policy, called a coinsurance provision. And a penalty can be applied at the time of claim settlement in the event that property wasn't insured up to the estimated replacement value. And it can affect the outcome of that claim and the total claim settlement that that individual gets. So when you get that notice in the mail that from your insurance company that the coverage amount on your home is about to go up because they've reassessed the estimated cost to rebuild or they've done an on-site inspection, you don't always want to react negatively to that.
Okay.
Yes, you want it to be fairly valued based on what the estimated cost is to rebuild, but you don't want to automatically have a negative reaction and say, well, I don't want this to my policy to change because my tax assessed value is coming a lot lower.
Right, right.
There's not necessarily a direct correlation, you know.
Good to know and interesting. And in light of where we are today in today's market, that makes a lot of sense.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
Well, I hope you're going to stick around with us because we are going to talk with our other guest, Mr. Lucas Acosta of Fuji.
That's right.
I know. So tell us about what you do. You got some fascinating things going on with your tech products.
Sure. So 4 years ago, I was crazy enough to start a company called Fuji. And if you guys have your calendars in front of you, 4 years ago, October 2008, was when the Lehman Brothers collapsed.
Oh, yeah.
It's a perfect time to start a business.
midst of that whole bank failure thing.
Yeah. I didn't get that memo. but, you know, it's been just a blast. What we get to do is work with businesses and schools to implement Apple-based IT. So Macs, iPhones, iPads. The fun way to say it is if there's an Apple logo on it, we'll make it work in business.
Gotcha.
My history was I actually worked for Apple. Mm-hmm. I was one of the trainers at Apple, delivering both business workshops to Apple's customers and internal employees. Mm-hmm. And I just saw a market to really bring these awesome gadgets that people love to use for movies or, you know, making great presentations and really using that in the marketplace.
Okay.
And 4 years later, you know, by the grace of God, we're still having a good time. And we're here based in Midtown.
Awesome, awesome. And I know before the show we were kind of chatting. I was like, oh, this should make for a very interesting conversation because the studio here, we're mixed between PCs and Macs. So
yes.
I will confess, I love Apple as a company. I remember in business school just reviewing, you know, their case studies, and it's a fascinating company, and I love it. But I'm terrified to convert to PC to Apple from PC. Mm-hmm. I don't know, and maybe I'm stuck in the 90s. So talk to those of us that really feel like we're Apple in spirit but scared to make the plunge.
She's still using tape decks.
Oh, okay.
And rotary telephones.
So we need to have that conversation. Okay.
It's not quite that bad, but it's almost there.
But, you know, you're not the only one. There's it seems that sort of the stigma of the 90s is still very apparent today. In the 90s, you were a Mac person or you were a Windows person, and there was nothing in between.
Right.
You know? And if you had a Mac, you couldn't really communicate with anything Windows-based and vice versa. And really, with the onset of the internet, with standards like email, you know, Exchange, so forth, it's a non-issue now. And you can use a Mac in your corporate environment, and no one on the other side receiving that email will know that you're using a Mac.
Hmm.
That's true. But now let's just talk about some of the different. There are some stern differences between both environments that, you know, of course they got to compete. So, talk about how you kind of overcome, you know, being in that Mac environment or going to clients who are in that Mac environment, and they still have to communicate with people on a PC.
Sure. Level. So one of the first questions that we often get when someone's sort of considering getting a Mac, right? But just don't know if they can really move their business over or just get a Mac for themselves. One of the first questions is, what about my Word documents, my Excel spreadsheets that I've been using for 10 years, for 20 years?
I love Excel spreadsheets.
Oh, aren't they wonderful? but the fact is that Microsoft themselves make Microsoft Office for Mac. Mm-hmm. It's made by Microsoft in Redmond, Washington. So you have Word, Excel, and PowerPoint that run on your Mac, and they save .doc files, XLS files, you know, all those sort of terms that you're familiar with. And that entire file server that your office uses isn't obsolete. You can double-click on any of those files, and they'll open right up on the Mac. So that's usually the first sort of hurdle that people will ask about is, can I even do the same things? And for most businesses these days, the applications that they're using revolve around three things: the internet, email, and Office.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Microsoft Office.
Right.
And that's all available on the Mac. So as far as compatibility goes, it's becoming just less and less of an issue. And then once you actually get into what you can do with the Mac, as far as presentations that you can create that are just absolutely stunning with Apple software called Keynote. It's sort of like PowerPoint on steroids. And then there's also just super great software that comes on the Mac, like iMovie, which might be marketed as sort of, it might look like a great way to make home videos, but the fact is we make it for our own business marketing videos that we include on our email blasts every month, that we include on our website. And we're able to do all of this in-house because it's such great software and easy-to-use software that we don't have to go and get training for or outsource.
Now, one of the things that your company does is helps people who are on this Mac platform, and I'm totally on the Mac platform, by the way. I'm totally contrary to Myra here. But it's really all about getting more productivity out of all of these different things that we have. I mean, from tablets to the iPhones or to the phones.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I could tell you right now, I use my iMac to do my movies with Final Cut Pro, and I use my iPad as a teleprompter. So talk about how you bring more productivity into the business environment through these different...
Sure.
He's drinking the Kool-Aid. Can you tell?
Oh, yes.
I'm drunk on the Kool-Aid.
We're having a good time on this side of the table. No, that's a great question, and I think if what it all boils down to, especially in a business sense... you know, a lot of business decisions really revolve around ROI, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
What's my return going to be on this decision that I make, whether it's marketing, advertising, hiring, and so forth? It always comes down to the bottom line. And the one word that I use is productivity. So before you get into these awesome sort of ways that you've been using your iPad, you know, you use your iPad for a teleprompter. So do I when we do our videos. But besides all those neat applications, on the very fundamental level, there are just some fundamentals about the Mac and iPad that make it actually cheaper to operate than a typical Windows environment. For example, as you guys know, there are basically no viruses for the Mac.
Right.
Okay, so I haven't run virus software ever on my Mac. And there are some industries where you know they require you, some corporate environments that want you to run antivirus on the Mac, and so we've installed that before. But we don't run antivirus software, and none of our clients do, and it's just a rock-solid platform that requires virtually no maintenance.
Wow.
It's kind of funny. We're in the business of switching people to the Apple platform, and there's no maintenance involved, you know? So we're almost putting ourselves out of business.
No. I was going to say one and done. It's like, wow.
Right, yeah, exactly. So we want to help people make that switch, and just time and time again, we're seeing IT costs actually improve year after year once you're running on that platform. There's less that goes wrong because all of the software is designed by one company. Everything knows how to talk to each other. Mm-hmm. So your webcam is not from Best Buy. Your photo editing software isn't necessarily from Photoshop. You can put that on there, but Apple makes that. Mm. So the second you plug in your Canon camera, the photo software opens right up. There's no installation required. And because everything's made by one company, there's just less that goes wrong. It's sort of like having a car where the engine is made by Chevy, the transmission is made by Ford, and your exhaust system is made by BMW. You know, you don't really see that. And in the car industry, and Apple has taken that approach. They're manufacturing the batteries to get the best battery life that's tuned to their software. They manufacture the cameras. They design their webcams, even the processors. So what you get, what it all boils down to for the end user is just a simple experience. And so productivity is absolutely, I think, when you're looking for dollars and cents to make the decision, you can call any of our clients. It's just such an awesome, awesome platform to run your business on. And then you can add the fun stuff, right, on top of that.
Right.
To make your business videos and use your iPad for all sorts of fun stuff.
Unfortunately, we're not in a video studio because Jason's over here, like, literally climbing on the walls. The fun stuff. Ooh. Now, you kind of talked about this and alluded to it earlier with the whole dollars and cents. Why is it that apples are so darn expensive?
Right. That's a good question. And with respect, I'll counter that with a question. Why are BMWs so expensive?
Because it's the ultimate driving machine.
Right. right? So, and I'm not going to be biased. If it's Lexus, right. if it's Mercedes, if it's BMW, what you're buying is a machine that's been tuned, right? The suspension that you get, the tires that you get, the transmission that you get, everything is tuned just a bit more to work tighter, so you get faster acceleration, better braking, better handling, and just an overall better experience. Mm-hmm. Because there's more time spent on that craft. And so the same goes with an Apple platform. You can't buy a slow Mac. Okay? The reason why you might see a Mac laptop that starts at $1,300 is because they're using this year's Intel chip. They're not using the Intel chip from 2 years ago. So if you go to Best Buy and you have a budget of $500 for a laptop, you're going to get a $500 laptop, but is it going to have the latest wireless chips to make sure that your Wi-Fi is going to be fast? Is it going to have much RAM? Is it going to have a fast processor? And oftentimes you'll see, if you read what you're actually buying, it's last year's equipment. Mm-hmm. So, and that's why Apples are refreshed about 2 times a year on average. Every Mac gets mm-hmm. what they call a speed bump because they're using Apple's latest chips. Hmm. They've got super high resolution displays, and so they just don't worry about selling the stuff from yesteryear, if that makes sense.
No, it does.
So if you do go online and configure, say, an HP with the same processor as your Mac, with the same amount of RAM as your Mac, and I won't get into all mm-hmm. the nerdy terminology. If you configure your Windows computer on spec with a Mac, usually you're going to be within about $100, maybe $200 of mm-hmm. the price. And then after that, once you've used a Mac, you'll just see that the software is different, and that sort of makes it more valuable.
I'm the ultimate, I'm guilty of this all the time. My brother always tells me, Myra, there's some things you just can't skimp on, you see?
Right. Sort of like coffee, like life's too short to drink bad coffee.
Exactly.
That's my mantra.
I know,
right?
And see, I'm that one that goes into the Sam's or Costco or whatever, and I'm like, oh, wow, there's a great laptop, but there's one that's $100 less, and then I keep going around until I get to the $500 one.
Well,
that's
Myra,
from 3 years ago.
Myra, once you go Mac, you never go back.
Oh, that's good.
You know, and it's interesting. You've heard of
I got a million of them.
And it's the truth, you know. I've never seen someone switch to PC. Right? If you think about it,
I've never
met anyone that's switched to PC.
Yeah, I know. And I think I'm just hesitant. I'm resistant. I don't know why. But yes, I need to make a decision because my laptop, like I said, it's dying. And I don't need to make that $500 mistake because then in 6 months I'll be making another one.
Right, right. And you know, just like any new computer that you might get, there is going to be a learning curve, mm-hmm. you know. But I'm finding, I mean, within a day, you can do your basic functions, Word mm-hmm. documents, Excel, email, and get online, right? But then within a month, you're just, it's as if the switch never happened.
Okay. And that's another thing that I'm really concerned about. I mean, you know, everyone that I talk to is like, oh my gosh, but Apples are so intuitive. And every time I pick up my mom's iPad, okay, this is really pathetic. My mom has an iPad, right?
Right.
She's 30 years older than me, and she's already drinking the Kool-Aid. But I mean, I'm like, okay, so apparently my brain doesn't work like an Apple because I can't figure out what the heck to do.
You know, that's the case. We see that so many times. You know, I used to train for Apple, so I'm oftentimes right there with the Windows users uh-huh. who are coming over to the Mac, and you do have to kind of think differently.
Okay.
So
No pun intended.
Sorry.
It's interesting you say that. My 11-year-old daughter, uh-huh. you know, from the moment she picked up an iPhone, immediately figured it out. My wife to this day doesn't use 90% of the features on that iPhone. She wants to go back to a Droid product. I think it has something to do with the way we're wired. I don't know.
It does.
Interesting.
And my daughter, she has autism the same way. She picks up the iPad and knows exactly what to do. So, I mean, you know, I just don't want to really give her a $1,300 piece of equipment. Like, tell me how to use this, honey.
Right, right, exactly.
So,
but that's actually a great way if you're looking for like a first Mac, whether it's at home mm-hmm. or in your office environment, just for someone to start trying. Just getting one Mac to see what it's like, And heck, the resale value of Macs are so good. 6 months later, you can sell it, and maybe you lose $100.
I know.
You know,
it's crazy.
It's not like this. It's huge investment where there's no turning back. But once you get Mac,
you never go back. Okay, so let's assume that I'm about to jump off the cliff. I think I've got the two people here that have twisted my arm, and I've been doing my own arm twisting. What do I get? I mean, there's the do I just go with an iPad if I need a mobile solution, or do I get an AirBook, or do I get the iMac? Or
sure.
First, you let go of your beeper.
Wow. Let's make a trip to the recycling center.
Do they still have those?
You can't trade that in.
There's no upgrade offer for that.
It's just like getting me. Just because I said tape earlier when I was giving you back your DVDs doesn't mean I actually use tapes.
So that's a great question. You know, with all these iDevices that we're seeing, and iPad, iPhone, MacBook Air, the answer is that it really depends on the person. Okay. So it's hard to give just one sort of general answer for everybody. You know, on one hand, there are schools that are still rolling out MacBooks, you know, to all of their student base. And on the other hand, we just worked with a pharmaceutical a couple of months ago. They're an international company, and they are now providing only an iPad to their sales reps. So that's a company that has fully embraced the tablet form factor,
right?
And their salespeople only get iPads now. They don't even get a laptop. So it really depends on what you're using it for. If you're looking to replace your laptop,
right?
Okay, maybe it's 4 years old. It's on its last leg. Then I would say you're probably going to replace that with a laptop.
Okay.
For most people, an iPad is a secondary device.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm surprised every day how more and more people are using the iPad as their primary tool.
But the Windows Office compatible software, or the Microsoft Office compatible software, Excel, Word, et cetera,
mm-hmm.
Do you have the ability to use those same file formats on the iPad?
You do.
You do?
You
okay.
do. It's funny, though. Microsoft hasn't stepped up to the plate and made their own app. I feel like they're losing a lot of opportunity. Mm-hmm. But there are some other third-party apps. One of them is called QuickOffice, if you're taking notes. QuickOffice, it's $20,
mm-hmm.
and it's an app that'll read and write. So it'll write documents in Word, Excel, and PowerPoint.
Hmm.
So that's a great solution for if you're going the iPad route. Wow. And, of course, on the Mac, you just buy the tried-and-true Microsoft Office.
Okay.
Now, if you're really drinking the Kool-Aid, then you could. Okay.
Oh, gosh. Jason's there. You go. Hold on.
If you're really drinking the Kool-Aid, Apple has actually written a suite that is equivalent to Microsoft Office.
Hmm.
They call it iWork.
Right.
Figures, right? Put an I on it. So iWork. And iWork includes the three equivalents to Word, Excel, and PowerPoint. They're called Pages, Numbers, and Keynote, kind of, you know, different fun names. But out of all of them, Keynote, the presentation software is what really turns heads. That's what I get comments on when I'm doing a workshop or some kind of seminar. They always notice, what are you using to present? You know, the transitions are elegant. It's super easy to throw in a video. If
I
you're
like
using
transitions, I like that.
Yeah, yeah. You know, there's always we always need eye candy, right? Keynote has plenty of
eye candy. You just keep doing it.
So Keynote is sort of, again, the PowerPoint equivalent, and it's just an awesome tool. You can, and once you get the hang of it, you can make presentations even faster. But what I tell people who are just making that first plunge, go ahead and buy Microsoft Office.
Mm.
That's not going to require much of a learning curve, and you'll still be compatible with the rest of the world. And then when you're ready to kind of start creating some new marketing materials for your organization from scratch, take a look at iWork. It's a good investment.
I have it.
Oh, wow. I should have known.
You know, there may not be an I in team, but there was an I in Apple.
Oh, my gosh.
We're a little drunk over here on the Kool-Aid.
I was going to say, yeah. He's just going to keep lobbing those up.
Diluting it with this water.
But so what's next for Apple?
Sure. You know,
Fuji.
Right, of course.
Fuji Apple. Oh my gosh, is that why you did that?
There you go. So, yeah, Fuji's my favorite Apple. And, you know, I wanted to keep the name kind of fun, the name of our company. And so many IT companies, when you think of an IT company, you think of someone eating donuts and plugging in a lot of cables, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like
yeah.
carrying around heavy computers and servers
and whatnot.
You don't
look like a typical IT guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, hopefully that's a good thing. I
yeah,
don't know.
Yeah, it is. No, you look like an Apple IT
okay,
guy.
There you go. It's funny, sometimes we walk into an office and they're like, you guys must be the Mac guys. But yeah, so I wanted to create a company that really kind of brought the human side of IT to the picture. And so I wanted kind of a fun, you know, playful name. And that's why I went with Fuji. And to have a clean, you know, website domain name, I changed the spelling. So FOOJEE.com.
I like that.
And so, you know, you said it earlier, we're basically riding on the coattails of Apple.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Apple creates these products, the Mac, the iPhone, the iPad, and there are just so many industries that are being shot up from these devices. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we're helping organizations do. And as it stands right now, as far as where Apple is going, they just had their Q4 results last week, and they reported that 70% of Apple's revenue was from iOS, meaning iPads and iPhones.
Wow.
So a lot of their business right now is in mobile.
Mm-hmm.
So that is sort of a hot market. I think we're going to see people who are acclimating to this tablet form factor and using that more and more for everyday business. And that's sort of the buzz product right now, the iPad,
right.
And especially the iPad Mini coming out Friday. Yes, I pre-ordered one.
The iPad Mini? I don't... Okay, this is so shameful.
It's bigger
I
than an iPhone,
the size
smaller
basically going to be about the size of
yes.
this
Yeah, and you have a... What is this again
Samsung
right here?
Samsung Galaxy 2.
So we have a Samsung Galaxy 2, and that's a 7-inch screen, I think.
I think so.
Yeah, the iPad Mini is 7.9, so right there in the, kind of the same form factor. And it's basically an iPad, but miniaturized, hence... iPad Mini.
Hence the name.
Right.
Okay.
So just lighter in weight, basically.
Exactly.
Easier to carry around, I guess.
Lighter in weight, bit better price point. It's going to be $349 for the iPad Mini. You've got LTE on it if you want that super fast cellular connection, Wi-Fi. So I think, you know, as I guess not to sound like too philosophical, but as society gets comfortable using this tablet form factor, I think we're going to see different applications for each size. So the 10-inch screen that we'll see on the iPad and other larger tablets out there, you really can eventually replace a laptop with a 10-inch
right.
screen. I believe wholeheartedly you can create stuff on it and really do work on it. I think the 7-inch screen, that sort of size, is great for consumption.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of a word that's used a lot these days. Reading, doing quick emails here and there. Facebook, right? and doing that sort of thing, great sort of couch device. But in business, it's also just a lightweight, super lightweight device that makes it even easier to just throw in your coat pocket or into your briefcase.
Now, I've got a portable keyboard that this will dock into.
Yeah.
Are there portable keyboards available for the iPads?
For the iPad, yes, okay. There is. There's a slew of products out there like yours has where the keyboard is built into the case.
Mm-hmm.
Makes it nice and convenient.
Mm.
For the iPad Mini particularly, since it's only coming out, when is that, 2 days from now, there's really not a keyboard for that quite yet. So I'm sure
coming.
There will be.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
I'm sure
be.
It is.
It's quick question for you. Just on the Fuji side, you mentioned that you service businesses and schools. What about in the government sector? Are you moving into that at all, or are you... looking at that as potential client, and what kind of growth do you see from the government sector in terms of using these types of products?
Yeah, that industry is surprising me every day. I'll read reports, like the FAA is now approving iPads as the pilots' flight books. So pilots are able to replace their, I don't know how many, pound heavy flight bags with just an iPad. And so there are definitely government institutions that are starting to adopt these because of their security also, much more secure than the Android platform. And right now, where we've been sort of involved, to answer your question, is mostly with the schools. So that's how we're sort of getting our feet wet with these government types of projects. But at this point, the sky's the limit.
Okay.
Wonderful. Well, I mean, I just have really enjoyed the conversation. I think I might be starting to think about drinking the Kool-Aid once I get rid of that beeper and the 8-tracks. The rest of the antiquated stuff. Well, I mean, we've had a couple of really good conversations about how to, you know, expand your business and think differently, you know, by using a Mac in your business, and also how to protect liability when it comes to insuring your goods, services, and your business from liability. But, you know, I think it was a great show, some great information, and I'm sure our listeners got some really good insight as well. Thanks again, everyone, for joining us for another episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Reality. Join us each week as we talk about what makes business ownership so rewarding as it relates to the challenges of running a small business and ultimately why you choose to do what you do. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next week. Make it a great day.